Okay, so we have two people for public comment.
Good evening. For the record, I'm Todd Woosley with Hal Woosley Properties. I'm also one of the owners of the Totem Commercial Center up in Totem Lake. My address is 12001 Northeast 12th Street, suite number 44, and that's in Bellevue. But I've been a former resident of Kirkland, and we've been property owners in Kirkland since 1978. First, I commend you on the good work. You're making a lot of progress on your policies for transportation, and hopefully that'll bode well to implementation improvements to this transportation infrastructure in Kirkland. I'd like to talk to you about two particular items tonight. The first is the use of the BNSF corridor. As I mentioned, we own the and manage the Totem Commercial Center in Totem Lake. It's on a parcel that's nearly 5 acres. It's on the north side of Northeast 124th. And just south of the BNSF corridor. So we're sandwiched in between these two key transportation corridors. One's being used and one is not. We think there's a tremendous potential, depending on how that corridor utilization comes to pass, to support the vision for Totem Lake. You're talking about how land use and transportation combines, and we're working in properties in other jurisdictions where we're seeing rail corridors help be the catalyst for the redevelopment of properties into the kind of urban center that is part of those jurisdictions' plans, and believe that there's an opportunity for that with the BNSF corridor. That being said, I also appreciate the challenges Kirkland has with taking a defunct rail corridor and making it possibly a joint-use corridor with both a recreational trail and bicycle commuting, as well as an active train corridor. So I'm going to suggest that the city segment the approach to the BNSF corridor and segment the portion through the residential portion of the city, which has the issues of, regarding people who live adjacent to it, and that portion that's in Totem Lake, which serves the commercial district. And it may even be further segmented to the area that's north and east of 124th and 124th, so the grade conflicts there can be eliminated. There should be more motivation than just adding this capacity. That's the other jurisdictions are poised to put these types of systems in, and that's part of the Kirkland's competition now and in the future. For example, the city of Redmond is poised to purchase the BNSF corridor that is in their city, and the plan is then to aggressively pursue construction and implementation of rail service from Redmond to points north, Woodinville perhaps all the way up to Snohomish. It's possible that if that moves forward and we're stuck on what to do with the corridor here, the opportunity to have rail service to Totem Lake, Kirkland's identified urban center, could be missed. So again, it may make sense to phase in how we approach the plans for the BNSF corridor, and in the areas where property owners adjacent to it would be more likely to support having rail, but that may be the first phase of the planning for what to do with this corridor. We're identified as a key external stakeholder, although we haven't been contacted yet. We'd love to participate in the process. We're also participating in the overall process that's getting underway to look at the land use plans up in Totem Lake. And it's not just about the mall. I mean, the city's dedicated a lot of time to helping reinvigorate that mall, but it's about the whole neighborhood. We believe that it needs to a thorough review. And again, Kirkland's competition, a lot of other cities have already gone through a process. They've reviewed their urban center plans and have adjusted them, in some cases rather significantly, to improve the feasibility of the redevelopment and the accommodation of growth within urban targets. We're about to see an increase in those growth targets, by the way. The state's Office of Financial Management will give new projections. They're due in a year or so, and then that will all trickle down to each city inside the urban growth area, including Kirkland, needing to figure out how to accommodate yet even more growth. Again, not an easy task, but that's the task we've been given under the Growth Management Act. The other thing I'd like to talk on briefly is, I think somebody brought up the concept of impact fees and charging the new development for some of the infrastructure. And while it's reasonable to expect growth to pay part of its way, keep in mind the infrastructure that's allowed a lot of growth has been paid for out of broader based funding sources. Impact fees also, they are required by constitutional law to have a direct nexus, so you cannot charge a new developer for transportation infrastructure that the development does not create demand for. So that's the maximum that an impact fee can be charged for. Then, as a matter of policy, the city will need to determine what level that should be, because the higher the impact fee is, the less feasible it becomes to convert that old single-family neighborhood into multifamily housing, for example, or in our case, a mixed-use project with retail and light industrial into perhaps a mixed-use urban center project with high-tech offices and retail, and who knows what else the market might be when we're allowed to do that. But keep in mind the feasibility of that, and I'll give you one example. In Bellevue, in the Bell-Red Corridor, they estimated that they could charge $14,000 per trip from an office building. They elected to charge $5,000 a trip instead. Now, it's less new for Bellevue to actually charge an impact fee for this, but it gives you an idea that they wanted to make sure that it was at a level where it would still not affect necessarily directly, kill the feasibility of new development. And then just overall, I believe the city, you know, you're talking about, you need to make the infrastructure investment so you can accommodate the growth, because that's the role the city can play, that, and along with the state and even federal funds. Put the infrastructure in place so that when the market is ready and the regulations allow it, then the property owners can go ahead and build, redevelop the sites to accommodate the new economy that we have. So I think that the city does have an opportunity as well as a responsibility to make those investments. They're long overdue. They are big numbers, but they're coming down in the last couple of years. We've seen 30% and 40% reductions in other areas on contract amounts for these infrastructure improvements. There's a pretty good chance now to get it in, and that way Kirkland will not miss out on the next economic development cycle, and particularly up in the Totem Lake neighborhood. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions if I haven't used up more than my share of time already. Great. Again, thank you for your attention.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Georgine Foster. I live in Kirkland. Two things. I don't know if you were aware of Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood announced in March of this year that, quote, the end of favoring motorized transportation at the expense of non-motorized, that transportation agencies are urged to take action on a number of fronts, including the creation of bikeways for pathways for bike riders and pedestrians, and providing children with safe biking and walking routes to school. He also indicated the department is discouraging transportation investments that negatively affect cyclists and pedestrians. I didn't know if any of you had read that. My second point. Greg here is from Sound Transit, the sort of recently, Sound Transit bus fare increase, according to the literature, was going to cause a decrease of 42,000 riders per month. This was, I believe, a 50-cent increase on their fares. I was wondering how many of these riders are in the 405 corridor, because I know it was all system-wide, and how many of those riders could be saved if the $50 million capital contribution for partnership for passenger rail in the BNSF corridor were allocated for the alternate purpose, which they can do, to improve speed and access to transit in the 405 corridor, and provide it now when transit agencies such as Community Transit and Metro are finding it necessary to cut services because of reduced revenues as well. When ST3 is proposed on the ballot, perhaps it could include an appropriate amount of money for well-planned commuter service that provides proper number of stations and parking rights, deals with at-grade crossing issues of safety and congestion, environment concerns, and funds for pedestrian and biking pathways for tens of thousands of people. I think that perhaps Kirkland could encourage the fact that we address monies that can be used to help provide commutes for more people now, and when we have monies, appropriate monies, to develop the corridor properly with all the parking rights, not limiting the number of stations as was suggested by train advocates, that they do it properly. And I can send other information I got from the Marin Bicycle Group down for Smart down in Sonoma and Marin counties, where they planned. It took 10 years, but they planned, and now everybody's happy. The rail people are happy. The bike people are happy. It is. It needs to be planned. Right now, revenues are down, but we need to do it properly. That's my concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Are other people that want to talk?
Hi, I'm Jim Hunt. I live in Kirkland. Just two quick things. I want to thank the city for putting a web page out on their website just related to the East Side Rail Corridor. And then also on that web page is a link to a King County council meeting where they were discussing the same issue. And I watched that video after your last meeting, and it just seemed like the two groups were... I didn't hear them referring to your group at all, and I didn't hear them referring to anything about a lot of the stuff that you guys have been hearing about and talking about. So it almost seemed like there was a disparity between what they were looking at and what you were looking at. And that's just my, you know, uninformed opinion. But if you haven't seen that video of their council meeting where they're discussing the topic and the all the different things that are coming into play, and they're concerned about the various pinch points and the money and dual option versus single option, it might be worth taking a look. Thanks.
Okay. That's the end of public comment tonight. I'd like to move ahead with our presentation and discussion on the East Side Rail Corridor. Tonight we're going to hear from Greg Walker from Sound Transit. Just to give everybody perspective, we've heard from, I think, three different groups so far. From the point of view of a couple of the groups that have been talking about rail opportunities, we've heard from the East Side Trail Alliance, and Greg is going to talk about Sound Transit's interest in the corridor and as a way to get us educated in terms of how this corridor might be used in the future. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. We've got a PowerPoint presentation that we'll walk through, and then first I want to start off by thanking you for your patience in this presentation, and we've been invited several times now by David, and it's our normal practice that we usually, you know, go to our board and try and seek direction from them before we go out and start giving public presentations, so I appreciate your willingness to wait for that. So we did just recently present this information and this approach to the board, and got buy-off on proceeding with it, and so I'm happy to be here and talk to you about it. So this is the actual presentation that we gave to the board. I'm happy to go through it at your pace, and meaning that if you want to stop me and ask questions, that I'm perfectly happy with that. Or if you want to wait until we get to the end, that'll be fine too. So What I want to cover is a review, put it in context, a review of the past studies. I'll get through this review parts fairly quickly, hopefully, because I think it might be repetitive for you. And then I think you're probably most interested in getting into the third topic, which is talking about what ST2 says and this $50 million and how we're going to go about making that available, et cetera. So, the East Side Corridor, I know you're well aware of it, 34 miles from Renton up to Snohomish in Snohomish County, where a significant component of it goes right through the heart of Kirkland. Recent corridor studies, back in 2008, we did a joint study with PSRC, and that was directed by the state legislature, and the finding of that study was that commuter rail service, or passenger rail service, I think is actually how we called it, was feasible in the corridor, and that it could be a meaningful component to the regional transportation system. And prior to that, PSRC had done a study of the corridor where their main finding was that the corridor should in fact be preserved for future use. So there's been a whole long, drawn-out process on how this corridor got into public hands, and the only thing that I want to emphasize here is that back in 2007 and 2008, when we were doing roads and transit, and then when we kind of remixed and redid Sound Transit's component of it and came up with ST2 in 2008, it was presumed at that time when the board made decisions on adopting the ST2 plan and putting it out for ballot, that by the time that happened, it would be in public ownership. And so they set a two-year time limit on these funds, this $50 million as part of that, in order to allow the process to take place. Well, that didn't happen, as you all know. It's just only recently gone into or fallen into public hands. And part of that deal is this group of interested parties, Sound Transit being one of them, agreeing through a non-binding memorandum of agreement with the port to pursue negotiation on acquiring certain rights within the corridor. And so the right that Sound Transit, of course, is interested in is to preserve a passenger rail easement for some future utilization of the corridor. And sorry, I'll just comment that the main point of negotiation with us right now is really with King County and trying to work out the details of how a joint use rail and trail system would work in the corridor. And so that's really just trying to figure out how the easements talk to each other, how they work together. That's turned out to be quite more of a struggle than we ever anticipated, kind of which comes first, et cetera. But we're both committed, Sound Transit and King County are both committed to dual use in the corridor. So in terms of ST2, our interest in signing that agreement with the port and with the other entities, there's a segment, about a 1.1-mile segment, basically in Bellevue, south of 405, that different alignments of the East Link project would utilize. Either would utilize the length of that section or cross over it, et cetera. And so we're actually using East Link project funds to acquire these rights. So in that section, that 1.1-mile section, we're actually buying the ground, the dirt. In the rest of the section, we intend to buy the easement for future use. But that covers us in the event of the various alternatives in the East Link process, so that we don't predispose the decision in that by buying any particular component. We've got that 1.1 mile that covers every contingency. And then the future easement, the easement for the future transportation use, is in alignment with the findings of that PSRC and Sound Transit study that said that there was, you know, it could be a meaningful component of a future system. And I can talk more about that. And then, again, it's referenced in our long-range plan. It's not identified in any particular mode or improvement, but just that it is a transportation asset and should be preserved and possibly could be used in a future phase of the regional high-capacity transit system expansion. So what does the ST2 plan say? It says that there is up to $50 million that can be used in the corridor in a public-public partnership or a public-private partnership, you know, referred to as 3P, and that is set aside for capital assets, recoverable assets, to protect our investment. So it's not intended to be operating funds. It's intended to provide, to purchase either real estate, rolling stock, that sort of thing, that in the event that that the assets are no longer in use, then Sound Transit has the potential to recover that fund, that money, and use it elsewhere. And so the partnership, we're seeking a long-term partnership. The board went through a long discussion back in 2008 on this as to whether it was a demonstration project, and if it was a demonstration project, was it 3 years, 5 years, how long was it, what was the exit strategy for that at the end of a demonstration, et cetera. And we determined that, you know, it's really in the interest, if there is the potential for a partnership in that corridor, for a service that is funded, operated by a private entity, basically under license from us to operate using our interest in the corridor, that it should be for a long-term component. And so that's what we're looking for. And again, that two-year time frame, the funding expires December 31st, 2011, so I'm going to get into the schedule of what we have to go forward with. The plan did not identify a procedure for soliciting a partnership in the corridor. It just said that it was in response to a lot of conversation that was out in the public from certain segments, certain interest groups that thought that and still do think that a rail service could be operated in that corridor by a private entity. Along with freight service and various other activities that are being proposed for it. So I think we can move on to the next. So now that it's in public hands and we're struggling with trying to figure out what this P3 solicitation is going to be, and our best thinking to date in the direction that we got from the board is to pursue development of an RFP. So we've actually got a firm on board that is has a task order contract with us, an A&E firm that has some experience with developing different procurement packages, and they're going to help us develop the scope of work and request for proposals / request for qualifications. We haven't exactly nailed that down yet how it's going to come out. But we want it to be an earnest effort to seek partnership opportunity, and basically what we would think is going to happen, and you've probably heard from the GMP people that they're developing a business plan for the corridor. We want to make sure that other short line railroads, other interested parties across the country have adequate notice of our intent and information on the project so that they can decide if they want to, you know, we're trying to seek competition in the corridor. We prefer not to get just one proposal, but so that, if we can go on to the next slide. So what our timeline is, we obtained this board guidance at the end of May, in May right now. Just last week, and we're looking at release of the RFP in late summer, actually probably September is the time frame we're looking at for that, and then have evaluations complete by March of 2011, negotiations complete by July of 2011, and board approval by August of 2011, and then if we don't receive credible proposals that we are not able to successfully complete negotiations with a partner, then of course that money expires, and that offer expires, and that money gets diverted to trying to think exactly how the plan says a future implementation of steps to further implement BRT service in the 405 corridor, roughly to that effect is what it says. But you go to BRT service in the 405 corridor. And then we'll have to, if that's the case, we'll have to go through a process to figure out what that means as well and how that money will be allocated. So we are currently coordinating with King County. They're interested in conducting a regional process on the future use of the corridor. And, of course, we've got this commitment that is a solid commitment that we have to live up to within ST2 that has an expiration date. So we are proposing that we go ahead and proceed with the RFP process, and that then that get folded into the county public process after we figure out if we actually have proposals. If we have somebody that we've selected to proceed into negotiations, then we would require them to do a public process and fold that into the county process to define how that's going to work with rail service and or trail service. So that's really the basics of it. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have, get into any level of detail you might want to.
Okay, let's just go around.
Okay. I'm interested in the option that happens if you don't choose a partner here and the money goes to less rapid transit in the 405 corridor. Is there any effort, or would there be, to kind of look at the cost effectiveness of those two choices? My hunch is that BRT in the 405 corridor might get more bang for the buck in terms of passengers per dollar than some kind of rail service on the BNSF right of way. And it just seems to me that there should be a comparison there.
Right. So the region has gone through, you've probably been a part of it, study through WashDOT of the 405 corridor as a part of the master plan calls for BRT.
I'm new here, so
oh, okay.
I may know something.
So some years ago, before my time as well, the region went through this process, and so there is a master plan for 405, and part of an element of that master plan calls for BRT service in the corridor. There's the capital facilities really are not there today to make that happen, and so it's a waiting game of when, you know, WashDOT might have enough revenue in order to pursue that project, the various capital projects. They are looking at tolling right now in the corridor. They've done a brief tolling study of the corridor, doing HOV and HOT lanes, hot lanes, high occupancy toll lanes in the corridor to try and generate revenue to make various improvements. And so this $50 million, theoretically, if the timelines can line up, would be folded into that. If that was not ready, if WashDOT was not ready to move forward on that, then I would, not having any board guidance right at the moment, but using my, professional judgment, I would start looking at, we know of several park and rides up and along the corridor that need expansion, that would be an element of advancing BRT. We certainly could use it. The board could decide to just add service to it. It's $50 million. It's a fixed amount. When you start talking about operating dollars, those are continuous, ongoing. So our overall financial plan doesn't anticipate that, but the board, has the discretion to make that decision. But we've not ever proposed a what we might call an alternatives analysis on looking at the cost benefits of each corridor and weighing them separately. It's always been part of the long-range plan that it would be BRT service in 405. It would be light rail across I-90 out to Redmond. An element that we don't talk about here is that also part of ST2 that impacts Kirkland and also this Eastside Rail Corridor is that there's a commitment to do a high-capacity transit study, basically do the next round of the ST3 corridors. So we will be initiating that process. Right now we're thinking 2014 to initiate that, and that will look at, y'all know about the whole discussion about should there be light rail on 520 or not. So one of the corridors that's identified in ST2 is light rail to the east side via 520 with Kirkland included in that, service to Kirkland. There's also service out to Issaquah. You can start to think of various service plans and how that might happen. Is it, an Issaquah to Bellevue to Kirkland to Bothell, possibly to Canyon Park, maybe getting up into Snohomish County again? Is it just across 520 to Kirkland and then off to Totem Lake and Bothell, et cetera? But we'll be going through that process, and that'll be, probably a two and a half year process of evaluating those corridors and looking at the costs and benefits of those investments. So there's still that chance out there, that future investment as well.
Tom?
Yeah, I guess that's my question. We're kind of looking at this corridor and figuring out, you know, what our community would like to see happen there.
Yeah.
And my question for you is, will we ever see rail in Kirkland if we don't put it down the BNSF line? And I hear this ST3, but I don't know if you spoke up about 520 when you were talking about rail on 520. Did Sound Transit have an opinion about that?
Do
you want a rail capable 520 built?
Yes.
Bridge? You did?
Okay. Yes.
Good for you
guys.
Yes.
Yes. Our only problem is money. We just put rail everywhere.
You put your word in this.
We don't have enough money.
I love you. But now, if we don't do something down the corridor with rail, when is Kirkland likely to see rail service? I mean, we're going to be taxed as ST2, and we're going to be paying like everybody else, but all the rail service is somewhere else.
Yeah, so
most of the money spent out of ST2, vast majority, is all rail. So when do we get something? We have to pay for our own. We have to have a private entity run it. Didn't seem like we got our cut, and so I'm wondering, you know.
Yeah, so, boy, I could answer that from all kinds of different angles. One of the constraints that we're under is a policy that the board has adopted called sub-area equity. So the Sound Transit region is divided into five different sub-areas. And basically, the policy says, in general, that revenue generated in those sub-areas has to go to the benefit of those sub-areas. So the east side sub-area has put all of its eggs in the East Link basket. And that is basically absorbing the majority of the East Link revenue. So that's the highest priority for the East Corridor right now, or East Sub-Area, East Sub-Area. But that'll get built, and then that capital is available for other investments. And so if you allow me to speculate, because we don't have a plan yet, we haven't done these HCT studies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kirkland's the next on the list. You know, we've got to finish the extension to Redmond, because right now it'll only go to Overlake Transit Center. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, small relative to what it took to get to Overlake. It's a small investment to get, so that certainly should absorb the full financial capacity of the East Corridor sub-area to get to Redmond. And then so we've got to, what the East Side is going to have to do and what our board is going to have to struggle with when we get to that point is weighing the investments going out east I-90 towards Eastgate, Issaquah, Sammamish, and going north out of Bellevue to Kirkland, Bothell, you know, edge of Woodinville, etc.
And again, the corridor, if we don't use the corridor, do you use 405? Do you come?
So we'd have to do that, yeah. So we couldn't make that decision without an environmental document, an NEPA document, so we'd look at all feasible alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
The BNSF corridor is very attractive, you know, in terms of making a light rail alignment. There's neighborhood issues, there's traditionally systems who have built light rail lines along freight rail corridors, there's usually an incompatibility with land use associated with those. And so if you think about once you get past Totem Lake and start looking at the corridor, you look at an aerial photograph and all of a sudden it's, you know, big warehouse district and industrial, and you're not going to draw a lot of ridership there. You start looking in Bellevue and Kirkland and even on the south end too, you don't want to ignore that down towards Renton, but now you've got compatible land uses. You've got, you know, people live there and can access it and can get to where, you know, hopefully they'd want to go, or at least make a transfer to where they want to go. So it, you know, it's attractive from that standpoint. But we got to weigh those benefits of having that compatibility in land use and transportation with the impacts of having a transit line through people's backyards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the community and the Sound Transit Board may decide that that's something that they don't want to do, that's too big of a conflict to overcome. And so they may choose 405. They may, you know, we may have to look at even, Washington.
Boulevard, yeah.
Yeah.
One last question. I don't want to occupy too much of your time. Other people want to ask questions. If we don't have rail in the BNS corridor run by some third party, okay, in this PPP partnership, and you do it in ST3, something in ST3. How far down the road is it? Is that 20 years down the road?
It's probably 2030 time frame, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I've got two quick questions, maybe not quick. First of all, Greg, so Sound Transit's going to be actually purchasing the right-of-way for that section in Bellevue.
Right.
Correct. And then the rest of it.
Acquisition, right. Yeah.
So, and then you mentioned there you'd have an interest in the rest of the corridor. Let's say there was a third-party operator. So what would Sound Transit's interest be in the section through Kirkland under that kind of scenario?
So we've secured the easement. Right now we're trying to figure out, right now it's an undefined easement. Is it defined by sections of the corridor? Is it just across the corridor as an overlay?
Is it the entire corridor?
The entire corridor within the Sound Transit District, only, okay. So it only goes up to Snohomish County line, right. And then that's outside of our district. But so that would be the asset that we would own and we would make available to a third party.
Okay.
So basically, like I said, we would be licensing our interest to them.
Okay, and then the second question is, the process, you said that whatever, your RFP and decision would feed into the county's process. So I'm just trying to figure out who has the final decision. So let's say you do your RFP and you get a feasible proposal, and you say recommend to King County to say, well, we think we have a viable operator here.
Yeah.
Now, who at that point can decide, well, yeah, that's, could King County say, well, that's nice, but we don't think we want to have rail in this corridor, so go do something else? I'm kind of a little bit concerned about getting too far ahead. You go out and do your RFP and you get a proposal, but the county, maybe not as far along in terms of looking at the other aspects of the corridor. So, who makes the final decision in terms of whether something like this would move ahead?
So, they're not incompatible. All plans moving forward and commitments moving forward are compatibility of both rail and a trail. So it really is who gets first access to the top of the rail bed. So if a third party does, submit a credible proposal and we decide to proceed into negotiations and those are successful, theoretically then we've got first right to the top of the rail bed. We're not going to force, it would never be credible proposal to force a railroad into or a section of the right-of-way other than that rail bed. It would just be financially, I can't imagine how a private entity specifically could make the finances work if they had to rebuild an entire railroad bed. It would have to be done in a way that was compatible with either adding a trail at the same time. Now, GMP has talked about that. Mm-hmm. We've not seen a proposal, but they have come in and talked to us, and we know that they've been around various groups in the region and given presentations, and they seem to have a plan for providing both the rail and the trail. And they think that that is compatible with their financing structure, which is money from FRA, loan from FRA. And so they would want the trail. The only kind of contingency on that is that the trail also serve as a railroad access, as an access road for the rail. That's on the surface without having seen any more than just sitting around a table and having them tell us that idea. That seems feasible. It seems to meet both criteria of having a trail and a railroad.
Okay. Joel, you have any questions?
I was wondering, I know it's really early in the process, but have you guys started to do any thinking about the kind of criteria or metrics that you would use to define credible?
So we're just starting that right now, right? We've never done a P3, and there's very few examples of them around the country. That's why we've got HDR We've accessed their services, and they're bringing in some experts that they have in the company to help us with that. So we're just now, they just submitted to us a proposed scope of work and we're evaluating that, and we'll hopefully have that resolved next week. But that would be one of the tasks that we would ask of them, is to help us determine that evaluation criteria.
And so as part of Credible, would you also be looking at that there's a certain level of performance they would need to meet to provide a certain number of trains per day? I mean, sure, they could, a private partner could provide something, but
right,
but that's
right. But is it really credible passenger rail service?
Right.
So we're struggling with that right now, whether we set a minimum threshold or we just allow the proposers to propose. And so we're not sure how to address that yet. The feasibility study that we did that showed that there was a potential with PSRC that that it could be a significant component of the regional transportation system, that assumed an all-day service at 30-minute headways. That'd be a very expensive service to operate, but we wanted to give it its full fair share in that analysis. So that's what the assumption was with all the ridership estimates that we generated. You know, our Sounder service is nowhere near that. We only operate peak period service on the Sounder line, so it'd be difficult for us to suggest that something more than what we operate as a commuter rail service should be done by a private entity. But that'll be part of the discussion that we have up through September with the board on the various iterations of fleshing out what this RFP is and what the performance criteria are going to be. So, you know, at a minimum, from my perspective, just again off the cuff speculation, it would need to have some credible level of at least peak period service.
There's a little follow-on on that one. In that calculation there, you check with the local agencies as to queuing impacts and things like that, and figuring that what kind of delays will have in the traffic system.
Yeah, certainly. And we're going to want to review any kind of intersection protection,
right,
you know, gating, etc., or signals for crossings, for at-grade crossings. We're going to need to work with whether it's something that we take on or whether we put it on the proposer. A traffic impact study, you know, is going to have to be done. Yeah, certainly.
Also, as part of that, it seems like it would be important to keep in mind, I mean, station areas are and there's different ways to do the stations, and there's certainly, I think, would be requirements from the community as to a certain level of station that may be beyond, you know, do the parking lots need to be paved kind of thing, you know, stormwater treatment, those kinds of things, but also I think to be factored in.
Right, so our board will also require an environmental process, whether it's, you know, it'll probably be a SEPA process. We have to figure out if it could potentially be NEPA if our environmental council determines that, you know, this private entity is using FRA funds and FRA has a concern, then they may require it to be a NEPA document, but at least it'll need to be a SEPA document. That will be a sure requirement of the board that they review all the environmental considerations from traffic to stormwater to property takings to displacement of people, et cetera.
And Greg, when would that SEPA process take place?
So that would have to take place between the time that we decide to go in or into negotiations with the potential partner and the, you know, what we proposed is wrapping up that negotiation.
It's about
about a year, about a 9-month process.
Wow. Okay.
So could you say that again? Like after you're going to have the RFP process?
Could you go back to schedule?
So we can't. Yeah. We couldn't initiate.
I'll go back to schedule.
Okay. We couldn't initiate a NEPA or a SEPA process, an environmental process. Let me just call it that. We couldn't initiate an environmental process until we knew what the proposal was anyway. So that's why I say until we determine that we've got a proposal that we would make a recommendation to the board to proceed.
Looking up here, where would it happen?
So evaluation complete is March, and that's when we decide to enter into negotiations. And then we're saying that we think, you know, we can wrap that up by August. So I said a year previously. We had tried to lay out a schedule where it could be a year-long process, but the schedule does not allow for that. So it'll basically be from March to August. It could go all the way to December, though. We've got the drop-dead, unless, you know, it's a board decision. Another thing the board could do is say, this doesn't allow sufficient time for public process and environmental considerations, and we're going to extend the deadline. We've got a credible partner to negotiate with, and we're going to extend the deadline to June 2012 or so.
And that would be like a supermajority of the board because it's changing SD,
yeah,
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I guess the final thing is just a copy of the presentation would be great for the website, but yes, this has been really informative.
Yeah.
I mean, feel free to post it. Very helpful.
I want to try and wrap this up pretty quick, but I want to give you guys a chance to ask.
Just a quick follow-up kind of on what Joel was getting at with the credibility issue. Would one of the things Sound Transit would be looking at in proposals be integration with the rest of the transit infrastructure? And one of the things that was mooted with respect to GMP was a service that might only make it to South Kirkland Park and Ride, not fully connect up with East Link, for example. What would Sound Transit's reaction be, or thinking be on?
You know, I don't know. I can tell you that my concerns are that there's no unavoidable impacts, meaning that any potential impacts can be mitigated, and that there's a frequent enough level of service that it is a reliable and dependable commuter choice. And part of that, it would be hard for somebody to convince me that a service that did not connect to the light rail line was an effective component of the regional transportation system.
Tom?
I have a really simple question.
Yes.
At least I think so. because this space, this rail line, has been rail banked, does that mean that rail has a priority in any thinking we do? And does it preclude a unilateral, that is a trail-only option for this property?
It does not preclude a trail-only option. It does not preclude going somebody coming in and the county or Sound Transit or some one of the other partners coming in and ripping out the rails. My understanding, I'm not an expert on rail banking, but I've been learning quite a bit lately from our legal department. And so my understanding is that it is related to freight service,
right,
is what rail banking is meant to protect. So barring somebody coming in and ripping out the rails, any short line hauler could appeal to, I believe, FRA to implement freight rail service on the corridor without any consideration of the region or the local jurisdictions.
Could I add some? I'm not an expert on it by any means either, but I had heard that it's freight rail for which there's not a viable alternative.
Which is a
very different.
That is, yeah. Mm-hmm. I had not heard that before.
Okay.
Could I ask one really quick one?
Yeah, real quick.
Do you anticipate going out to other agencies like City of Kirkland or others when you're developing your RFP? A lot of different things that could go in there, how it's evaluated, what's necessary, what you're looking for.
Our concern would be, generally, we like to protect the contents of an RFP from public disclosure until it's actually put out for everybody. So you guys understand that, yeah. So I could go back.
We have interest, though. I mean, our issues that we may feel are important to.
Oh, yeah, address,
such as traffic delays or other things like that.
Things that you would desire to see in it? Yeah. Yeah, I think we could certainly accommodate that.
Now, do you see the RFP process? I wasn't clear on where you see the RFP process relative to the county's public process. And
so we see it going first.
Which?
The RFP. We're having a hard time reconciling how you do a joint process or a parallel process where the county is asking what is the future use of the corridor, and Sound Transit has already made a commitment and voters have already approved a plan that says that we have to offer this for commuter rail service. So we'd like to resolve that question first. You know, there's all likelihood it could be that we don't get a credible proposal and it's off the table, and then the county can proceed with...
And is the county staff and ST staff working on trying to talk about how those two things go together?
Yeah, we are.
Greg, I have one last kind of process question that gets back to how you're fitting in with the county process. What I heard is that if you get a credible proposal on the environmental conditions are met and everything, that Sound Transit has kind of the right of first refusal to say, okay, we're going to go ahead and award this and operate whatever service. One of the things we've heard from some other groups is it's kind of a timing issue. Well, if you let the rail people in, then how long, who's going to pay for the you know, the trail part of it? You know, it'd be a lot easier to just rip out the rails and put a trail down versus, you know, potentially having to widen it. And so the question is, if that's the case, to what extent does the rest of the funding picture have to be put into place to say, well, our vision is a trail and a rail, and you know, certainly by your decisions that could take place could preclude certain trail options, you know, if the rail section were used. So I guess I'm trying to get a sense for how that factors into the overall county process that's going to decide what the entire corridor will look like.
Well, it's certainly less expensive to build a trail off of the top of the rail bed than it is to build a railroad off the top of the rail bed. So that's what I was getting back to. Whoever gets there first is really what it comes down to. And it's not a race. It's just we've got a timeline, and so we've got to do this process and to fulfill our commitment to the public. So in all likelihood, the county is not going to come up with funds to build the rail in the time, by even by the end of 2011, probably. So, you know, and so look ahead. So say, you know, there's not a passenger rail service or provider that we're able to complete negotiations with, and so we put the $50 million in BRT service in 405, and we look at using the corridor, you know, in an ST3 potential 2025-2030 time frame, and there's certainly by then the county has, you know, implemented a nice trail. Most, you know, we'll have to figure into our cost estimate replacement of that trail. It would certainly be a lot cheaper for us to replace the trail than to build a new rail bed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we thank you very much for coming and look forward to getting good updates as time goes on.
Yeah, sure. Happy to. Happy to come back whenever.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. So while we're doing the video portion of our meeting, we have to use our microphones.
Okay, so next on our agenda is a follow-up discussion about the Eastside Rail Corridor and really looking at the process that we're going to be using here in Kirkland to provide input to the process and also to help identify what we're going to present to the council when we meet with them in the middle of June. So, Joel?
I'd just like to say one thing just as we get in the conversation is that Mr. Woosley described Redmond as aggressively moving forward with the rail option. And I think that it would be more safe to say that, you know, Redmond is starting a master planning process and evaluating all the options for that corridor. Is very interested in how to get a trail in there and potentially rail also. And so just to characterize that, I think, in a more equal way and as or a more accurate way is when we're talking about it and moving over it.
Welcome back, Marie and Kari. You've been busy since our last meeting.
Yeah, we have.
Do you want to give us a little update on the memo and kind of where we yes. we're standing in terms of a public process.
Well, we pledge to come back at this meeting just kind of update you where we're at with the public participation planning process. And the big milestone here is we've completed the key stakeholder interviews, and thank you to all of the commissioners for participating in those. I think we, the memo says 18, but I think we were able to achieve a couple more since then. So for the sake of the audience, I just wanted to kind of highlight, without getting too detailed in the memo, unless you have specific questions about that, just some of the issues that surfaced from kind of the common themes from all of the interviews that we conducted. And it's on page 2 of the memo. But common themes that we heard were, at least the question was, what issues do you, should the East Side Rail Corridor address? And we kind of asked, depending if you were an internal stakeholder or an external, we kind of asked the rating of that. You know, how important is that issue to you? So important issues that came out, and I'm not reading them in any order, is obviously the use of the corridor, rail, trail, or dual use, timing of the development of the corridor, public safety concerns, the rail operations, trail design, other development along the corridor, and some of the feedback that I had heard was 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, way out into the future. Future long-term use of the corridor, connection with regional transportation systems, funding, and then overcoming the not-in-my-backyard sentiment. And I didn't really know how else to say that, but those were really verbatim words from several stakeholders that I interviewed. Part of the public participation training that we received is for us to kind of plot out the decision makers and where they are on what we call this orbit, and that's the graphic in your packet. And one of the questions that we ask the stakeholders is who do you feel are the decision makers and the ultimate decision makers? And most reflected King County and all those associated with, you know, the use and easements and all that with the corridor is kind of the ultimate decision maker. And then from there came the city of Kirkland, and many folks reflected the Kirkland City Council was kind of the ultimate decision maker as far as this interest statement that that is going to be the work product for this process. And then kind of another click out was the special interest groups, the advocacy groups that are interested in the use of the trail. And then another click out was the corridor property and business owners. And then another, the kind of the farthest click out was the general public. This graphic is really just to reflect what we heard in the interviews and where we feel the stakeholders are. As we progress through the process and start really engaging the public, these stakeholders are going to kind of move closer in. The more they're engaged or interested or concerned, or they'll move out, the less that they're interested in. But it's just a nice graph for us to kind of keep the perspective where stakeholders are. I think the two key issues that we hope to hear from...
Could I ask one question about that? The rationale behind the relationship of the interest groups and corridor property and business owners?
We kind of define them as who was organized and who wasn't.
Okay.
That makes sense. So the two key issues that we hope to get direction from the commission tonight, mm-hmm. I was at council last night, are the techniques that are identified in the staff report and then kind of the outline and the timeline that we've put together. So on page 3 of the staff report, having done kind of, when we first spoke to you, the analysis, the science part of the public participation process, we presented that spectrum, the IAP2 spectrum, and doing all the mathematics of this, the level of participation that kind of rated the highest was involved. But the table in the staff memo also includes techniques on the inform spectrum and the consult spectrum. Because inform is always a given. We're always going to be pushing out information. Consult is a nice way to get feedback. And then involve is really using some more involved techniques to do that. So I'll just turn to you and ask you how you want to kind of proceed with talking about each of the levels. If you have any specific questions about inform, you already know that we have a web page. You already know that we have a listserv, and there's currently 30 subscribers to that. We have a newsletter. There's just ways to push out information. So I don't know if you have any feedback on the inform level.
They all look good.
Yeah.
This is probably assumed that there would be some level of cross-advertising within the Inform so that people can learn about the webpage or the listserv.
Absolutely.
One of the other sources.
Right. So on the consult level, both Kari and I had heard from stakeholders that a scientifically valid survey would be a really good thing to have because it's unbiased, so to speak, and it can be supported with scientific data. So we're putting that on the table for your consideration, and I know that there would be a cost associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
It would require hiring a professional survey firm. The second idea that we had, and I think could have a lot of traction, is to have comment cards. It's not scientific data, but it's just a way to get feedback and to ask kind of the opinion or do a pulse check of the community. And we would have those available. Summertime is very busy in Kirkland. There are a lot of people that come and do a lot of things, massive amounts of folks. And we had the idea of, you know, having an informational booth set up at these various events, having that comment card. Again, it's just another way to get information, get some opinion, but it would not be scientific data. And then the third technique is focus group. And I don't know if any of you have ever participated in a focus group, but it's kind of a one-time setting with a facilitator. You're asked questions, and again, it's just kind of to gauge the pulse of awareness or to have them answer specific questions or whatever. So those are kind of three consult techniques.
I'll offer one comment, two things. On the comment card, it could also be a web-based comment card like we did on the active transportation plan. I've got a little concern about a survey just because for this type of subject, you can't give out a lot of information. You know, so if you ask people, would you like to have a rail or a trail, you know, a lot of people are just going to say yes without knowing, you know, what some of the trade-offs are and everything. And so if one could be developed that really could get accurate information, I think it'd be great. I just have my doubts about that. And at least at this stage, I would think focus groups might be a little bit better way because you can probe issues a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. I would go with that too. I shared that the concern I have about survey data is really good for discerning alternates, but they're not as effective for broad-ended brainstorming kind of data collection that meets that criterion of scientifically valid. They're worthwhile. They're another way, but those surveys are really very inexpensive, and they're very generic, and you end up with very generic kind of responses. However, I don't want to throw a survey away as an alternative. We, in fact, may need to do a survey X from here when it looks like we have 1, 2, 3 alternatives to say, okay, we've done our homework, we've provided our due diligence to look at these options, now let's get a broad sample to say how folks would respond to that. And again, it should be probably a weighted sample, looking at those who live at or along the corridor versus those who live further away, and so we could get some relative value out of that. I guess the piece that I would want all of this consultation piece to do is to lead to the next element, and that's information. And so how do we inform the citizens of Greater Kirkland? How do we engage them in, you got a chance, make your voice heard? And so I would like to look at those comment cards, those focus groups, to be also an opportunity to have this kind of information to share at that time so that it's not just the card, but it's beginning to build a community of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Right, I totally agree. And in the Inform section, there's the proposal to develop a fact sheet, a FACT sheet, or a frequently asked question fact sheet. So, that will, you know, whatever your choice would be, agreed.
I also agree that I think the survey in a situation like this may not be the best approach. I think even when you're down to two or three options, what a lot of times you find is that the people who have been engaged and involved in the process, and they may have had concerns or, you know, kind of a gut level reaction to what might happen, then they come in, they get informed, their mind may not change at all, but they may come away with a more holistic view. And so I think with a survey, what you can get is, you know, what do you want? And you can get a very uninformed kind of, like you're saying, for something like, how'd you get to work today? I mean, that's kind of a very fact-based thing, but would you use a trail if they built one? You know, in a lot of instances, that people don't even answer that question. You know, they might think they would, but until you get down like five more questions, you really don't know if they would. And so I think in a situation like this, a statistically valid survey may not be much more than just a, you know, polling kind of.
If I can restate yours, Joel, my concern is it's much like dealing with a two-year-old. You ask the two-year-old, do you want to wear a coat? Or do you want to wear the red or the blue coat? There are different answers. Yeah. There are different underlying assumptions.
Yes. Yeah.
Could I ask, though, if we were looking for any sensitivity to financing on this, in this process, in that, you know, we talk about when they are going to build it. Who are they? We may be building the elements of this trail, and if there's support for the community for a trail, oh yeah, if King County builds it. If we want to use this opportunity also to say how strong is the support to build the trails leading to it, how, you know, we may be asked to come up with some of the money to get this regional trail to work. There may be an opportunity to. And how much would you pay for that trail? You know, get a sensitivity there. That's only a question.
Or the other option is, would you create a trail support system, a parks district, a trails district, a railroad district? I don't know what
Absolutely.
That would be.
Absolutely.
I think those are all fair questions, and they're really important. And the way I do that one is asking somebody, do you want a Lexus? Is different than will you buy a Lexus?
Right, right.
I think I like the survey idea.
I like the survey idea.
But I think that, Tom, you have a good point in that as time goes on, I think our ability may be greater to design the survey or have someone help us do it and actually get something beneficial out of it. We do it too early, it's going to be a waste. If we do it at the right time and we ask the right questions, we may get that kind of answer that, yeah, I'm willing to vote for.
Right.
Yeah. So it may be that we keep it in the quiver, but use it later.
Yeah. Well, that's why I say it's to me, the survey is in the is the involve phase, not the consult phase.
So could we move to the involve?
Sure. I just wanted to comment. Yeah, it's kind of hard to think about what the survey could do until we know what the topics are that we're going to be asking. You know, so we lay this stuff out, and these are options. But it's like jumping to the focus group right now, knowing the questions that we're going to ask. We don't know that yet. I mean, we're kind of leading into this kind of blindly. But I wanted to throw out one idea that I thought was kind of cool about educating people at the same time as doing the comment cards. One idea came up that maybe, since you guys were interested in participating in this, you might want to staff a booth at one of these events where you could talk one-on-one with folks, explain, you know, have some graphics and a display board, and then in the end they fill out the comment card.
So I'm glad you said that, because I want to, in all of these, identify where the commission could play a role, because we need to be able to tell the council, among other things.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
So the next level is involve. Again, you know, we have a whole workbook of techniques. We just pulled out a few that we thought would be of interest to you. Tours and field trips, you know, holding the informational meetings out on the corridor at some point, someplace. an open space meeting. I don't know if any of you have ever participated in one. We did one with community members about a year ago around environmental sustainability. We asked the entire group of about 50 people one question. They wrote their answers down. We put them up on the wall. People came up and sorted them, and it was a nice way to figure out the common themes of what community members felt an environmentally sustainable Kirkland would be. And then we actually broke them out into groups and did the same thing and asked them specific questions, and they reported out. It's just a nice way to manage a big group. It's a nice way to just bring all perspectives out so other people, you know, everyone can hear all the thinking about the particular issue. World Cafe, if you've ever heard of that, we did this recently with the two neighborhood advisory groups to kick off the neighborhood plan update, and it's the setting is actually supposed to be like a cafe, and you have tables, predetermined questions at each table, the group answers them, gets up and moves to the next table, and at the end everybody reports out. Really the intent here is for everyone to hear the different perspectives and the answers, so everybody just walks away with the same list. So those are just techniques that we used before that we've gotten decent feedback about from the participants, that they thought it was interesting and unique. So we just offer those up for your consideration.
Noticeably absent from this is the idea of a committee. I mean, I'm just asking.
Well, Karina had, we talked about that, and our sense from meeting with you last time is you felt very strongly that you were kind of the advisory group to this, and for us to create another advisory group, we were concerned that that would take away from your desire to be very involved in this. It's an option.
Well, does the interest that we expressed, yeah, I agree that is consistent, but is that consistent with what you heard from other stakeholders?
It didn't come up in mine.
Didn't come up in mine either.
Okay.
Is that the collaborate kind of the next level, or is that why we maybe don't see
that's
it
right.
on this list?
That's right.
I thought advisory was in the involved.
Advisory can't, that's what we debated, remember? you know, I shouldn't say it didn't come up that somebody didn't suggest an advisory group. I suppose that was suggested. But they didn't say it had to be somebody separate than the Transportation Commission.
Comments on the involved section?
A couple ideas about field trip tour. Would it be feasible to somehow video the whole corridor and then be able to play it back at high speed? You could see the whole corridor in a few minutes.
That's a great idea.
I'm sure someone has that technology. I don't know that the city of Kirkland Multimedia has it, but
let's look into it. I love it.
Well, are you going to Google Street
View and get the...
another,
well, that's
Ray and I have one of these.
You have one of the
little... Oh, yeah.
Hey,
another possibility for an actual tour, and I don't know where we could borrow one of these, but one of those motor vehicles with the steel wheels.
Oh, yeah.
You drive right onto the tracks and then drive down the tracks.
Actually, a very interesting thing happened. We had a report of a fire. We had a report of a fire this weekend up on 116th Street in the underpass, mm-hmm. that right there where it crosses. And one of our folks went up there and found that there was a large pile of, well, it looked like things, just litter and things that had been burned, and it had burned one of the conduits that fell down. And in that visit out there, he looked down the track, and there was a Burlington Northern truck, and they were doing some rail repair there. And I was sort of taken aback, thinking, why are they out there doing repair? So I think they're still on the line.
Mm-hmm.
We probably could arrange something like that, but that'd be a neat... Because I don't think everybody wants to go out there in the rain.
Grace, give it some time. I think it's a great opportunity to do this.
Hey, so are you going to put a sounder train out there for us?
Sure, we can put a little bit about it. No, I was going to... BNSF is the one that you want to contact. They have given King County, I think it was, you know, Dow Constantine and Joni Earl and several other people recently to get the ride.
You had another thought?
No, it's Thursday.
Where does the special interest groups or anyone we might invite to present to us, Q&A with us, where does that fit in?
That's in the timeline a little bit more.
Assumed that?
I assumed it, but okay. It's identified in the timeline that you will continue to receive.
Okay.
Subject matter expert presentations.
What about those other decision makers that are further down the heat chain from us, like King County and all that? Obviously, Greg's here today. King County, somebody will come talk to us, or we'll talk to them and stay in touch and find out what's going on so we get the commission to hear what's happening?
Yeah.
Who does that? How would that happen?
I think we just talk to the appropriate people at the county. Like, I asked them before the meeting today what's going on, you know, and I'm sure they'd be willing to come out and talk to us.
Is there any better sense on timing, I don't know, of their process?
Any idea of a timeline for completion of purchase negotiations? We had another long negotiation session today and making progress, but no update of the schedule. We're going to look at the schedule again in 2 weeks.
Well, I think the reference earlier to the video really implied to me, I too looked at that video, and they're in a different place than we are, at least as a novice and watching that conversation. It's a very different conversation than the one we've been having here for the past month and a half.
Yeah.
I
talked to the staff, King County staff, after viewing that video about some of the concerns I had. Some of the things they were saying didn't really fit with what we were thinking about. And the staff cautioned me not to take too much stock in the direction that was headed, because there might be other factors that...
That was helpful.
Could imply.
Okay. One more piece of input that I think would be helpful for us, and again, here, I'll give you credit, Greg, for mentioning. There's a lot of past studies that have been done, and he showed us a couple with some conclusions up there. And I know in some of the past documents they've been summarized, either as Puget Sound Regional Council or at Sound Transit, they've listed all these documents, studies that have been done over the last 10, 15 years on this subject, or at least touch on it. I think it'd be valuable for us to have some summary of that, subset of that, just so we know what's been determined before and what facts people have worked on and what people have thought, rather than us.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, there is a summary in the beginning of the STPSRC document. I think there's an opening part that kind of summarizes those different resources.
And that's available on PSRC's website.
Yeah, and you can get to it from our...
That might be another good link to add.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's on there.
Oh, is it already?
I think these are all good ideas, whether we'd use all of them or part of them. And I think the idea that the commission would serve as a facilitator or convener of a couple of these meetings, that would be a good idea. The idea of staffing a booth and so forth. We'll need to think about what we're actually going to cover there and what kind of input. I get back to page 2 here. Near the top says the city's process will be credible if based on real data, not just gut feelings. And if you look at all the issues down there, I'm just concerned over the next 6 months that we're looking at this, there's not data, a lot of the information here wouldn't come out until whatever environmental process gets done next year. And we've already heard that there's the data from the two studies, and then there's other data that's been provided by some of the other interest groups. So we don't know, at this point, how credible some of those data are. And so if we're going to go and really have a deliberative process, somebody is going to have to assemble and try to make sense out of this. And I'm just a little bit concerned that we won't have enough information to really be able to provide a clear-cut set of answers, but I don't know, anybody else feel the same way?
I do, and yet, I'm sorry, Tom. I do, but I think we also ought to take advantage of the point that was just made. There have actually been lots of studies done, some of which contain data. He says, I keep trying to dig further back. We shouldn't recreate that. I mean, we should update it, perhaps, but we don't need to recreate it. In fact, that's another source of potential stakeholders. Who engaged 3 years ago? Who engaged 5 years ago? Who engaged 10 years ago? Are they the same people, or are they changing over time? That's an informative issue of how has this process evolved.
So I'll just say one last thing. I guess underlining this is, what is the question that we're trying to answer here? What is the end product? We talk about an interest statement. If
that's kind of how
what
went,
that is yeah. supposed to look like, then it really defines how much information we need. I'm not sure we define that.
What should I say? I think an interest statement, you know, I don't know, I just kind of picture it as, it might not have, and Joel, I think, particularly commented on this maybe last meeting, it's we're interested in not the corridor not being precluded as a possible high capacity transit link. Our interest is in developing a trail that is suitable for travel in all types of weather or something. Those kind of interest statements, and then you can only really go as far as your facts lead you.
But that may even be making the point of the that along the way, Brent Kirkland is interested in fact-based decision making.
Right. But I think even just carving out something that's with the information that you can carve out, you can begin to exclude other things. So an interest statement, not positional, like, we have to have, I don't know what would be a positional statement, you know, the crossing must be, you know, grade separated at intersection Z, but rather we're interested in not having, you know, trail-rail traffic conflicts or something like that. Anyways, if you have an interest statement, you can begin to at least carve away what you're not interested in. But I think interest statement is kind of what we said we were going to do when we went to council last.
Is there a way that you could outline the completeness of an interest statement? Don't fill in words, but does it have an outline? Because I too feel like, again, if we know what we're trying to find answers for, kind of easier for us to see how these all fit together and help us get to that.
That might be a first step, is trying to refine that a little bit of where are we headed.
I assume we'll have some background for the council, too. They don't want to recreate what we're going through. We're going to skip right ahead to you know, and they benefit from all this effort and all the people we're going to listen to and all the work that's going to be done. So there's probably more than just a two-page interest statement. There's probably some background, too.
So the question is, is everybody, you know, comfortable with this approach, kind of level of focus? I think I'm sensing that that's the case. And then the question leads into, okay, what should we be presenting to the council, or what's the next step to get this information to council?
Yeah, so we have a placeholder, at least, on the June 1st council meeting to come back to them with where we are in this process. And as you know, you've got a June 15th study session. You know, have about half an hour there. So I guess your options are develop something. We're back in one of these things where it would be in the next day or so, we'd need to get something in for our council packet for June 1st. Or do you want to talk about it, and or do you want to talk about it on June 15th? We could package something up for June 1st.
if you, that's your desire, or we could hold on.
The packaging it up look very similar to this with the focus on here's the techniques we're looking at using?
I think so. I think it would be this, maybe as your background, with some kind of cover memo on there saying we discussed with the commission, basically in line with this, we're coming up with an interest statement.
I'd like to spend some time with you on the process here.
That's good.
What I call is the roadmap. What's helpful when you do public participation is to kind of have the steps you're going to take and always know where you're at, what you've done, and what needs to be done. So page 5 of the staff report is the process, what we've kind of crafted as the process for developing the interest statement. So if I could just get...
It starts on page 4, I think, of their...
Oh, sorry. Oh, okay. So I'll just, for the sake of the audience, kind of describe it. Kind of the first step is the fact-finding, the information gathering, and that's where you're going to continue to get presentations from subject matter experts, the technical information that you seek. The timeline there is May through the December of this year. Kind of parallel at the same time, we're still going to continue the stakeholder interviews. We would actually do some of the techniques that you've given us the okay to do. That's May through November. And then from that comes the third action step would be drafting the interest statement. And the question in the staff report to you all is, do you want to take in public feedback, you draft the interest statement, and then you forward it up to the council, or do you want to take feedback, draft the interest statement, and then turn around and kind of represent that draft interest statement to stakeholders, and then forward it to the council? So that's really the direction that we'd like to get from you.
I guess I'd like to see a little bit of draft interest statement drafting a bit earlier in the process, so that there is a little bit more of an opportunity for the community to comment on the draft interest statement, and then continue on. So that would be my reaction.
Okay. Well, it seems like just even thinking of it internally as a commission, if we just start drafting an interest statement in November, the turnaround on that to have something that we're comfortable with recommending to council is not going to happen unless we start framing the questions earlier, you know, early enough that we can also turn around and get reactions from stakeholders to do that.
Is the feeling that we have quite a bit of information and we could start framing at least the outline of an interest statement over the next couple of months here, and then I presume a lot of the, quote, public process probably would be in the fall, you know, not much going on during the summer except some of the booths and things.
Right.
Carl?
I've been kind of wrestling with something in the back of my mind that bothers me, and I'm not sure this is exactly the best time to bring it up, but it seems to me that the result of Sound Transit's RFP process could very greatly affect our direction. If they get no viable proposals or they reject all proposals, then maybe we're headed in one direction. If they do choose somebody who says they can operate some kind of rail service in the relatively near future, that may steer us in another direction, and they could be very different paths. And I'm a little uncomfortable with us, you know, I hate to say we should delay, but at the same time I'm uncomfortable with us trying to make a decision not knowing their result, unless our decision is really like a two-pronged thing. It's this if they choose a partner, and it's this if they don't.
I could.
I guess from my perspective, there's going to be a Sound Transit board decision next year and process on that RFP. And there's also going to be this King County process. And during that process, the Bellevue Council member will run into the mayor of Kirkland and they may have a conversation about this. And I think that it would be very important for there to be, and so I think we should acknowledge that and say, you know, we aren't going to say, you know, in our interstatement, and Sound Transit should reject all comers for the RFP, you know, that, but we should have, to the degree that we can have a position that the council has bought off on, that the city community is working, you know, communicating with a single voice, that as we're working through this very nuanced and, gosh, you know, multiple processes that seem to be stepping on each other, a clear idea of what Kirkland's interests are, it seems like that would be good. And to wait for Sound Transit and King County to decide those things so that we can decide, I think, is backwards. I think we need to get out in front and at least start to, I think Dave described it well, start to peel back the things we, maybe we don't get to what we do want, but we can at least talk about what we don't want.
In response to that, I'd mentioned maybe a two-pronged approach. Mm-hmm. Kirkland, you know, going through all this process, might decide we really love rail service and we want to have it as soon as possible. But if Sound Transit rejects all comers, then here's what we want to do in this corridor.
And yeah, that may be what comes out of this interest statement is some, even some different scenarios that were kind of ahead of that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's a good point, mm-hmm. It isn't probably just one set of statements. It probably does have to look at different perspectives. Mm-hmm.
So Carl, it helps me to think, what do I want now? What do I want 5 years from now? Mm-hmm. What do I want 20 years ago now? And in fact, each one of those could be included in what you describe as two prongs. It may be 15, but it's if we start by what is it that we would really like to see as an operational paradigm? If we had all the money in the world, wouldn't that be keen? Mm-hmm. And then you move down from there and say, and these are the things, you know, it's got all the bells and whistles, but you know, we recognize to get there, it's going to be an iterative process. We're going to have to do this over and over. And so if we had freight-only service, because it's a rail-banked product, and that's what was accepted, doesn't sound like it from what we've heard so far, that might still be the first step to, in fact, moving us along. But we would want to, if that's what's going to happen, we need to understand what's its impact on motor vehicle traffic, what's its impact on pedestrian traffic, what's its impact on the communities through which the rail passes, because those are informed by what we've painted as utopian. I'm not sure that I believe we'll ever get to utopia, but I think there is some value of talking about what does it look like.
And and it's a very good point. You know, I hate to do a lot of work for find out the day we did it for nothing. But I think that it's possible we have a strong enough interest statement because there's been enough good public input that even communicated to the people who are making decisions outside of the city, like Sound Transit, might even influence what they do. If for some reason the city just the citizens, the businesses, the just don't want rail through their town. We just don't want it. Mm-hmm. Sound Transit's probably going to pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. And they should. Mm-hmm. If we have this industry that feels that way and we don't know it, we don't tell them, they may just sign up a rail line. You know, so it's probably good that we go through the effort. Mm-hmm. Right through that.
Are there other comments on the process other than what Joel had about
I would suggest that maybe a couple more touch points with the council. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be a conclusion, but just as an example, you know, here are some of the things we're hearing, and this is the tone, there's no conclusions here. Just there were a couple on the council that felt they really wanted to be very involved, and right. The more we can kind of show, here's a couple more touch points, we'll be back to you once we have, you know, our first round of fact-finding, and then maybe, you know, a couple iterations of the interest statement, I think that would be helpful.
So I'm going to suggest, in the spirit of time moving this along, my recommendation would be to prepare this memo and get it on to the June 1st agenda. And would this be on, in a reading file, or would we actually have a little time slot?
We have a little time slot.
Yeah.
And given that we have limited time on the 15th, that, and I'm sure we'll probably talk yep. with the council more then, but this would be at least
I think
a way to get this out for there. And they can think about it, and then when we meet 2 weeks later, have some input from them.
Mm-hmm. Are we going to take a test run at some sort of a interest statement format in this June 1st? Maybe going back to this idea that Tom says it's we're kind of looking at the whole vision, maybe there's pieces of it, rather than just in 2 years this is what we want. I think that was a very important point, because this is the first time the community has really looked at it as an option. It's always been BNSF is there, hey, we want a trail there. And that's what comes back in all of our comprehensive plans, Cross Kirkland Trail. It's never really had that other option there. So
I think it might be hard to draft an interest statement for June 1st, but we could talk about what an interest statement might be like.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got the time element and the content. I mean, there's two or three dimensions there you can lay out in words.
Yeah, I understand it wouldn't be the specific one, but what we address would be these things, short, medium, long term.
Yeah.
Public, private financing, whatever, you know, is it Kirkland money? I mean, those are some of the things we probably need to...
I'm not entirely comfortable with the interest statement getting into financing at this point. Honestly, I don't know if I would put that stake in the ground that we'll make a stab at how it would be funded. I don't know how everybody else feels, but I feel like we're more at the kind of vision-y, I think Tom said, you know, kind of that utopian, you know...
Well, I think there's probably a reality that finances are going to play a role, and if we had a placeholder of finances, it could be that we change that down the road, or we answer it, we don't have any money, so, you know,
one of our
probably good.
Yeah, we want to say something about
fiscal reality.
Yeah, something like that, or fiscal sustainability,
feasibility. We ought to link it to our conversations.
Exactly.
I think you've spent a lot of time
right.
and energy in doing this, and this is the way, again, we're going to begin to model. This is the way we're going to look at transportation. Mm-hmm. Does it move people? Well, we want to move them in several ways. Is it going to be sustainable? Well, you know, it's got to have these kinds of things, and you're in, so we can weave the theme around this as part of that, and it really comes back again exactly to Carl's issue of, but it also has to have flexibility. It has to be, able to be integrative and collaborative. So all of those things are part of where we're going. I think that then gives the council the option to say, you know, they're not saying you got to do this or this or this. They're giving us, again, a set of rulers, a toolbox, that we're going to be able to measure.
No, I agree with that entirely. It would be cool to have an interest statement around your proof.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're going to frame the interest statement in the context of our principles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Powerful.
Wow.
It's almost frightening.
You're either all wrong or you're all right.
That's right.
That's a business
one. We're all in, that's for sure.
To Sorry. On one I'll notice, when you were talking about starting to draft the interest statement before the public participation process, as a public participation process advocate, you might say, starts to make me wonder and just throw out a caution that we really want to be true to public participation and hear from them first before we start crafting. You know how many times we hear, you guys know what you're going to do?
It's a done deal. We already made
sure.
Money
back. Which you've already started the process with all the interviews. Yes.
But what do you think about just the idea of giving them some direction versus a blank piece of paper?
Absolutely.
Which
more or less
this list of issues is really the starting point of the framework of an interest statement that'll be around these topics, among others.
Yeah. I imagine the drafting at this point to be what questions are we going to answer, and then ultimately the draft will turn into the answers to those questions instead, but that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, so we wouldn't be framing anything in terms of this is the answer that we imagine, mm-hmm. and yeah, for right. for several months down the road until we have more public participation.
Thank you,
Ms. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to espouse, I don't have any interest in this particular book, but there is a book worth reading called The Wisdom of Crowds, and it addresses your issue directly. And it points out that crowds are very good at identifying very accurately what are concrete events. But the more personal interest, the more they are non-random, the more likely they are to make bad decisions. So Ray is correct. We could be completely right or completely wrong. So that's the reason we need the public participation, to say, are we asking the right questions, and are they the questions that we think the answers should be? But if we, I still feel very strongly, if you go out and ask a very open-ended question, as some of yours were, you get a lot of guidance and direction, but you don't get real definition in where the question, the response should have been.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
I'm sorry, can I just, in case I misspoke earlier, I realized after I sat down, when I said that the FRA has jurisdiction over the rail banking, it's the Surface Transportation Board.
Surface Transportation Board.
Surface Transportation
Board. Has, yes,
that's the website to whoever they are.
Yeah. They used to be the Interstate Commerce Commission or something like that.
Really?
I think so. Hmm. Okay, that concludes the video portion of our meeting.